This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Grealish, can he score in injury time? Jack Grealish still, Dansk into the box. Will he play on there? Yeah, it's into the corner! Lansbury! And he's already blown his whistle! The referee not here, he's given it the other way. And
that is
Tom Grealish.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me on the Aston Villa podcast that keeps it real, two of the whole 10's kingmakers, Mr. Dan Rogers, welcome.
Hello, sir.
And Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
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 You have all.
You have all, my comrade.
Akung.
We are here sitting still in a stupor, trying to recover from, well, it's the butterfly effect of what our friend has done in the 96th minute. First of all, it all kicked off in the away end with fans fighting stewards and police. Then it spun off even more, that incident, as my old man said, got banned from Instagram for 3 days for putting up a video of the incident. And the incident is, you know, what we're talking about.
It was so easy for me to hit the report button, though. I mean, I'm going to do this with more of your stuff, to be honest.
We are referring to the incident where Grealish goes down, obviously with the assistance of Crystal Palace players, threads the ball through, Lansbury dispatches it, get out of jail point for Villa, 1-1, cue the scenes, and it never happened. And the butterfly effect is that, you know, it's just shit goes down and you get a lot of wasted time. I can't post on Instagram for 3 days. People are getting arrested, police are getting hopefully sacked, and et cetera, et cetera.
And a steward, I hope he gets sacked as well.
And referees are somehow getting a pat on the back.
Yeah, well, we thought that VAR was introduced to the game to get rid of these farcical decisions, but we will get on to that subject later on. Coming up on the show, the death of Berry, more hijinks in Iran in the football world, one footballer who could potentially transcend sports in a big way, and also we talk about the Palace game, everything from the crystals to our friend and VAR. And also, the Scott Hogan touch count meter is dusted out and wheeled out with a shining sponsor for the first time. But first, a new segment to the show, Named and Shamed. Ricken Co, R-I-C-K-I-E-N-K-O, left an Apple review on the show. On the show that me and Dan Rogers, who we haven't spoken to each other for a while, first time Rogers has been on the show for a few weeks, so we had a good chat at the start of it. His review: 3 stars out of 5. Really enjoy the show, but I listen to Moms for Villa content. Half an hour in and still waiting. Now, this is, these misers are people I'm not that keen on. Just just the whole mindset. Somebody who really enjoys the show but has never left a really enjoy the show review before. But because he was left waiting for mention of the villa, and, you know, you tune in for the show, it's more than just the villa. I mean, we could just regurgitate the same old crap that you just hear everywhere, but it's also about personality and show and unpredictability. I mean, we would love to do a show where you have to wait an hour before the first mention of villa.
Oh, that just is my intention now, just to ruin this podcast for you. So.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I was thinking, but I mean, it would give Mr. Rick and Co, or however you pronounce it, I was thought, well, let's just do a podcast where we just don't mention villa, just to spite
it. Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's be self-indulgent.
What about a gin podcast? We could do a gin podcast, couldn't we?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that could be a good idea, actually. Mm. Just to talk about gin for an hour or so.
And my favourite county, which is Warwickshire.
Exactly.
But we'll get to that.
We'll get to that shortly. But Mr. Rick and Co, I mean, come on, son. If you're not going to leave a review when you live in the show, why leave one when you just want to make a snarly little point? If you could remove that, that would be fantastic. And we will make sure we mention villa loads of times in the first half hour. Anyway, moving on. If you're a fan of the podcast, please do give us an Apple review and give us a good 5 stars.
Easy.
Anyway, moving on to the 3 points. Mr. Dan Rogers, number one.
There are now a mere 91 league clubs where will we watch our football? Bury are no more. That's despite Sky Sports running it like it was transfer deadline day to their demise. And,
ooh.
Well, I think it was the writing was on the wall. I think there was some suggestion they were going to come back from the death, and they didn't. This probably isn't the place to go through it into great deal about as to how they arrived.
We've mentioned it
exactly.
On 2 or 3 podcasts. It's been in the 3 points, and obviously.
So we'd be covering old ground. But basically, I mean, a Villa connection is that they were supposed to be in the under-21 EFL trophy group alongside Salford and Tranmere and Villa, obviously. So they're no more.
They're also in Lincoln City's league. So there's one last game for the Imps, one last game for the Villa under-21s.
What happens with the points? Do you get the points or do they just chalk them all off? What happens with that? I've always wondered.
Well, they haven't played a game yet, have they?
They haven't actually played, so it's easy, I suppose, in that respect.
So they don't award the points. They just treat them as never having existed.
Yeah.
Ever.
Okay. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So in disappearing, they become the first team in 27 years since Maidstone to get...
Yeah. I mean, the Football Supporters Association was trying to have like a 27th-minute protest because Bury went out of existence on the 27th of August, and it was 27 years ago that Maidstone went out, and it was just a bit contrite, I thought, of the idea of a 27-minute protest because it's not that symbolic. I mean, there was... around the grounds of England on the weekend, you know, there was people singing the, you know, EFL is shit and about the EFL being corrupt, et cetera, et cetera.
The thing is, if you took on every protest, you'd be clapping every minute for something, wouldn't you? You'd just end up applauding.
Yeah, but I think the EFL, the penny may drop. And one thing the Football Supporters Association has done, which I'm on the National Council for, has over the last year come up with an actual set of regulations for fit and proper, but like a proper fit and proper, not just that you haven't been arrested as a director. I think that's the only real test. So hopefully the EFL will take those on board. I mean, we've had positive responses from the football authorities on the document that we've pushed forward. So we will see what happens, but something has to be done because you can't have clubs going out of business considering how stacked the cash is, obviously at the top echelons of the game. Point number two, Mr. Christopher Budd.
So we are whisking over to Iran, where Iranian football legend Hassan Raushan, I'm sure you haven't heard of him either, is apparently to receive 74 lashes for spreading unrest nationally in the national stadium. The strange link to Villa is that he apparently trained to become a manager with Villa, and he's going to receive these lashes as a symbolic gesture of defiance. He was fined 10 million rials, I think that's how you pronounce it, that's £195, because of comments about the club that he works at's youth system, where they are apparently more interested in making money from rich families than producing pro players. So part of his sentencing in court when he was sued for libel.
He's suggesting corruption in a dictatorship.
Surely
who
not.
Surely not.
Apparently after the ruling, he thanked Allah for the verdict and will obey the court's ruling, where apparently it will become something of a national symbolic act if he can take these lashings in the national stadium.
What a backwards, horrible, mean, backwards thing to do.
Of all the people connected with Villa who you'd want to give 74 lashes to in a national stadium, I can think of far more worthy recipients.
So my two takeaways from this are, this seems to be the same youth system that Villa are running, talking about making money off rich families. Because remember how we've commented in past episodes of the amount of double barrel names in the Villa?
yes, making money on the divorce settlement.
Since there's not that many talent that's actually come through, this seems to be happening exactly how Roshan has laid it out in Iran. And also, when he was training to be a manager at Villa, was he the man that was going to come in instead of Joseph Fenglos? Or was it Joseph Fenglos who was actually training him to be a manager?
No, I think it was I think he was Kevin McDonald's right-hand man, wasn't he?
Right, anyway... Moving on to the final points, this is an interesting one, and obviously women's football has been getting a big push, obviously in this country. The BBC are they're actually showing it live on TV now, even friendly games after the recent World Cup. The most interesting story I've read connected to the women's game is Carly Lloyd, the American international Carly Lloyd, who has been asked by an NFL team to kick in their final preseason game. She's 37 and she was invited to a training session, and I think it went on the internet viral. She kicked a 55-yard field goal and 55 yards. If you know your NFL is top range, it's probably the limit of what you allow your kicker to take on. So it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's probably hypothetical at the moment, but if there was a female kicker on an NFL team, and we all see NFL as the most masculine testosterone sport of them all, that would be certainly some statement. Anyway, let's go on to this Palace game.
Oh, must we?
This debacle.
The first thing that surprised me about this Palace game was the crystals are still about. Do you know what I mean by the crystals?
No.
Crystal meth.
That's how we've got through the last 8 years. Finally sobered up.
No, the cheerleaders, the crystals. Oh. I mean, there's a link from the NFL, really. I should have segued in on that.
Cheerleaders? But
yeah, I forgot about
matches.
That. When the teams ran on the pitch, they're given the guard of honour of cheerleaders either side.
Pom-poms
and crystals. They really worked on the name, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I totally forgot the crystal, but they've had them for a few seasons now. I remember when they came in, I think it was, when we're back in the days when we used to be in the Premier League before they kicked us out for 3 years. But anyway, we went into this game with our friend, we'll call him our friend, Kevin Friend. Our friend, we'd lost the last six games that he'd refereed in, and he loves to book us as well. I think he's in pretty much every one of those games. I think it's 10 of the last 14 games he's refereed. He's always booked at least five players, and that prophecy seemed to come true yet again. I thought Villa started pretty well, and you're thinking, oh, actually, back-to-back wins could be a possibility here, because Palace are dangerous. I mean, they're one of those teams that can beat one of the top four on any given day, mainly down because they've got so many decent, fast attacking threats. Off the bench came Townsend and Benteke, and you're thinking, well,
it was a really exciting player, Jordan Ayew as well. Not a man I'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
One to watch.
new talent. I mean, we're in a situation here where when you're gauging where Villa are at this particular moment in time, we got beat by a goal scored by a player that was in one of the worst Villa teams, the one that got relegated of all time.
And he's the scaliest footballer I think I've ever...
Hasn't he been relegated three seasons running or something? The year we went down, yeah. The year Swansea went down, and when there's someone else he took down as well.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So hopefully that's not an indication of where we are at the moment. Overall, it wasn't the greatest game, but obviously there's a few things to talk about. But first of all, let's go through it quickly. Villa started bright, I thought, but they're lacking this, they're lacking a clinical nature. You don't feel like Villa are a team that are going to score. Obviously we scored a couple against Everton, but it's not as if we're threatening when we're on the attack.
I don't think we're 100% ticking, are we, at the moment? That I thought off the last couple of games, Cruz perhaps not the greatest barometer, but I wondered whether we might see us start to click a bit more. I'm not sure our midfield's got the balance, and I do think Wesley can look a bit isolated at times, and we haven't yet got a plan B, purely through lack of personnel, really. I thought the first half was a bit of a... It petered out a bit for me, from our point of view.
Because after watching Villa against Spurs in the first half, we looked like we attacked with a intent on the counter. When we attacked, we seemed to be dangerous. And this hasn't really been the case since then, really.
Mm. I think my initial observations were I thought Gilbert struggled. And I thought that lack of the penetration that we saw in his debut game a couple of weeks ago, he didn't have as much success. And I thought a little bit of part of me thought, is it because we got some early bookings and we seemed to get a booking every time we kicked anyone as well?
Yeah.
And so we seemed perhaps a bit on edge by that, but I didn't. We weren't very fluid, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think we had. I think it was seven of the new signings were in the starting 11, and you can tell they haven't quite got these like little partnerships on the field quite clicking yet. You know, like Trezeguet and Gilbert haven't really, I don't think they've played together yet at all, have they? If I'm right in saying, I don't think they played together in pre-season. Jota and Gilbert, they had a little bit of game time. I actually thought they played well against Everton. I thought they might have pushed on a little bit. Luiz, for me, he's a technically good player, but I still think the jury's out on him for me in the Premier League. I just think the way he wants to play, he hasn't got that snap to his game that you need in that position. You know, he's used to probably playing in a much slower league. And I think he wants to be a little bit more contemplative on the ball. And the fact that Grealish wants to take the ball off him, and Grealish was virtually taking the ball off Mings and Engels at the back four. And you think you can't have Grealish. This was something we talked about numerous times last season.
Yeah,
when Villa were playing badly last season in the Championship, it was because Grealish was too deep.
Yeah.
And that was something very notable. I think Trezeguet is yet to, you know, sort of wow me, to be honest. I think everybody looked at looked at the YouTube clips of him and his dribbling ability and thought, oh, he's potentially going to be quite a devastating player once he gets going. I'm sure he might be, but he reminds me very much like the early days of Al Ghazi, where away from home against a team who are going to get at you, you think, well, if he's having a bad game, is he just going to front up and put a shift in? And I don't know if he's that kind of player. At the moment, he looks like a little bit of a luxury to take away from home for me.
Yeah, I mean, he looks fatigued from the off. I mean, for somebody who's 27, he looks like at least 20 years older, doesn't he? He looks a bit old for a 24-year-old, which is a bit worrying from the off. But he doesn't seem to be somebody that if you were a fullback that you would worry too much about.
I think, you know, a good winger traditionally they'll get you on the edge of your seat, and he doesn't seem to do that. He doesn't seem like that kind of player. I don't fancy him to beat people.
Yeah, I think we've got to see a bit more from him. I do wonder. It's very early days for a lot of these players, and you know, I think we're seeing. I just mentioned the fullback. You know, already you see two wildly different performances from him. But with Trezeguet, I thought you saw a little bit of frustration creeping in. You know, the challenges that he made were how can I phrase it? More than ill-judged, I think. And when he was on the yellow, the second challenge was clumsy.
Pointless.
Where it was on the pitch as well, it really was one of those classics. You have to ask what the player was thinking, or if he was thinking at all, really. And I think it's such a big division, and these sorts of the games where you're sort of circling to say, you know, we need to be competitive, we need to show intent, because these are the kinds of games where we might nick a win or grab a point. Everyone's got to be playing particularly well. There can't be any passengers. And I think that's the bit where last season we had time where we could watch an Al Ghazi develop in the sandbox, if you like, and understanding the game and the physicality and whatnot. Trezeguet looks tired, and I can only attribute that to the fact that he played all summer. But would that be an excuse? Probably.
Yeah, the interesting thing is we're not on both flanks. We're not really potent down both flanks. And there's one statistic. We've been a couple of games where we haven't had corners this season. And in this game, it took us, I think it was the last 10 minutes, we got a couple of corners. Mm. Now, is that because we're not getting enough penetration down the flanks? You know, sometimes, you know, you get your crosses in and they blocks or whatever and they go off for corners. That's one of the, you know, the normal ways you get a corner. Can we read into this fact that we're not actually forcing corners? Because, you know, every other team, I mean, for example, Palace had 13 against us, and, you know, a lot of teams get into around double figures against us. And surely that shows you that, I mean, you can talk about possession being even in the percentage, but when you look at the facts of actual effective possession, and corners would be that. We seem to be well down on that. Considering what the blueprint of the Smith team is, it's meant to be constructive possession.
It's a bit of a territory thing as well. You look at where Villa are playing their matches at the moment. you know, even the, you know, Bournemouth, we had a lot of the ball, but it wasn't in the final third. We have a lot of the ball in the middle of the third. The our centre backs and full backs have a lot of the ball.
Yeah.
We've said before, you know, traditionally Dean Smith teams are set up to have the ball, keep it, and play a ball retention based game. Well, at the moment, we don't seem to have, as Dan said, that plan B to, okay, how do we set ourselves up to play without the ball? And that was something. That was why Fulham came unstuck last season, was because they'd spent the season before, well, two seasons before in the Championship, having 70% plus of the ball, and they just weren't used to not having the ball. That's something we're going to have to get used to pretty quickly. I think Everton, they did a good job. I hope that that game and that performance wasn't a bit of an anomaly, and actually the Spurs, Palace and Bournemouth performances are actually a much more of a gauge of where we're genuinely at.
Yeah.
Do you not wonder with the and this was, I mean, Everton, I think we discussed about it, myself and David discussed how Everton had chances and were wasteful. You know, we were quite clinical in that game. Really.
They were. It was almost like an away performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It was, and I think that what it had was that competitiveness that I was referring to earlier. And I thought I thought at Palace that you know, we've just mentioned how Trezeguet is obviously not firing on all cylinders. I thought they worked Jota out.
Yeah,
and they contained that threat, because I think if you'd watched the Everton game, just the goal back, the way that we look to be playing for Wesley is, and this is why I don't think we're going down the flanks, we're looking to feed that channel. And I think if you saw that goal, you'd just basically say, well, starve that supply route. And I thought Palace did that really well, to be honest.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jota's quite predictable, isn't he? He's very left-footed and he doesn't have that turn of pace to just get his head down and get to the byline. He has to play in a very one-dimensional way.
Yeah, and what it combined with, I thought McGinn, it wasn't McGinn's greatest game. I thought Luiz was, as you say, struggling with the pace of the game around him. And Grealish was very, very deep. And what that meant was that I think when Jota did have possession, he was looking up and Wesley was the only obvious target, or you're coming back on yourself and then you're running into trouble. And that seemed to be on repeat for me, and we seemed to lose our way lose ourselves in traffic a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, we were lucky to still be in the game as long as we were, because, you know, MacArthur had, he had a gilt edge chance that he should have put away, and then he had a chance that flashed across the face of the goal, which maybe AU could have got on the end of it. And obviously, when we went down to 10 men, I thought it was Smith did exactly what he did against Rotherham, where he thought, well, I'm going to bring Davis on. So we've got two big guys who can hold the ball up, but we keep our three in the middle. I mean, as he says, he always wants to try to win a game, even in that going down to 10 men position. Now, Villa were, I thought they were compact at the back. They didn't give Palace much space, and it looked like we could ride it actually out. And, you know, there was enough threat up there. Davis, there was a moment when he got the ball and he took on like four or five players. He was, you know, he was holding up and rounding down the clock. But problem about Palace is, you know, they're almost like built to be a counter-attacking team. So I was a bit surprised that Villa went a bit gung-ho and they went up for the corner, and then Palace broke straight away. I mean, Gilbert was still jogging back. And, you know, when AU got that ball and obviously scored from it, the chaps back were Grealish and Mings. And I thought we committed too many people up for that corner, and we were going a bit gung-ho for the win because we could keep them at arm's length when they were attacking us, because they are a counter-attacking unit. And to be down to 10 men and then, you know, really pushing it on that corner, I thought, this is a bit kamikaze. And once that ball sprung, you just thought, we're in shit here.
Yeah, that was my reading of the goal. And
I just thought it was a bit naive by Smith overall to be attacking that much when you're down to 10 men. I mean, the idea of having two up top, I think it's a system that works for us. We can still take a team on with 10 men, but you don't, you know, bomb everybody up for a corner and leave it so open at the back. Oh.
It was naive, given that we hadn't adopted that approach for the you know, earlier in the game, really, you know. And I thought, similar to yourself, when the ball broke, and this is the one, there was two points I think that you made there that were quite right, that negate Mings really not covering himself in fantastic glory. Was the break was quick, 10 men, and he found himself found himself very quickly with AU bearing down on him. I think that where Mings will probably reflect is AU turns that ball and leaves him for dead, absolutely for dead, and cuts across him with such ease before finishing.
I think he got a bit lucky, because when Grealish tries to get his foot in, the ball kind of bounces back favourably for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's powering across in between them, I know, but it's one of those, really. I think that with the other circumstances, the other with the way that the play pans out in front of him. And if we have 11 men and we haven't overcommitted, I don't think it happens at all.
No.
With that said, it doesn't watch back well.
No, it just seemed naive at the time. I mean, when we had the corner, I thought there's nobody back there. Mm. And obviously, the worst possible scenario happened. When you're down to 10 men and you just concede a goal, you think it's game over. But I thought I don't think you can fault the substitutes. I mean, obviously, you brought Hourihane on as well, which I thought, since Luiz wasn't really making much of an impact.
It was a positive.
You've got the guy of End Products who is decent at set plays. So there's a chance there. Mm. There's a chance to snatch something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's playing positive by having the two big chaps up front.
Yeah.
He's got Hourihane, who's got some End Product. So we're as offensive as we possibly can, which I quite liked and have no problems with the team that finished the game. And then obviously when we're pushing a bit more, Lansbury comes on because obviously Wesley's run himself out.
And there's a couple of things there, I suppose. Heaton had kept us in the game up to that point. And in terms of a game plan, granted we'd conceded, but we'd got ourselves into a position where if the opportunity came, we could take it.
And then in the 96th minute, the opportunity came.
It did. And, it's going to be the rest is history kind of statement, I suppose.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This has obviously been debated to the point of overkill now.
Yep.
The main fact, when you boil it right down, is I think the referees have been told to let it play out until the ball is dead, and that allows, in an innocent incident like this. And then you can go to VAR retrospectively to sort it out. But if you blow up, it's a dead, done decision.
Yep.
So why he's blowing up at that stage, he must be 100% convinced that Grealish is diving there. But the whole idea of VAR is to get rid of mistakes. And we're not just talking about any mistakes. We're talking about, the big fuck-ups, basically.
A pivotal error.
Pivotal error, exactly. And this is, what the pundits have been saying on BBC, etc. It's the worst decision they've seen, in recent memory.
The thing is, it's the worst decision despite having the best technology at your disposal as well. And I think that where they find themselves is, for some reason, known only to the Premier League and the FA with the referees. The referees have positioned themselves where they are apparently above any sort of criticism of having to answer for, friends' decision is incomprehensible because he's the only person who saw what he saw.
Yeah.
In my view,
we've spoken about on the last, was it a couple of shows ago, about robots replacing linesmen. Well, they might as well, because linesmen are a waste of time now, because it's VAR that VAR decides that offsides.
Well, the baffling thing about this is not only that, and you have to wonder what's the agenda, because I wrote on my site that if you've got this technology and you've got allegedly highly trained, this is the best of the best referees that we have in domestically. It brings into question for me, take away Villa and all that, and because you can say that I'm looking through claret tinted glasses, but it calls into the question the robustness of the whole competition, because what if you can't get, with all that technology and the opportunity to review and all the training and whatnot, if you can't get that decision right, on for what for me was a fundamental,
yeah.
fundamental refereeing decision that someone on a Sunday league pitch could have called. Because, you know, it has been debated to death, but I think the broad consensus, it was a terrible error.
Yeah.
Yet no one from the referees union has come to say, you know, it's a terrible error. We'll learn from it.
Yeah, because, you know, you look at the Grealish, from the Grealish point of view, the backstory is he's the most fouled player in the Championship last season. He's the most fouled player in the Premier League this season. Does he go down too easy? Well, he gets, people seem to gravitate towards him and, you know, they do get stuck in on him. And Zaha got a touch to him and Cahill as well.
And Schlupp as well. Schlupp,
I mean, he was
well,
touched two or three times before he went down. And when he went down, it wasn't like he's gone down. He's played the pass. He's made the pass to Lansbury. And that's what he's looking. His eyes are following that ball to Lansbury. And then he gets straight up. He's not even thinking, because he could have gone down on the first contact straight away, and I think that was just outside the box. He could have got a free kick straight away.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? It was either a foul, a penalty, or the referee should have led the play on and the goal. And that's the baffling part of the whole way it plays out. And as you rightly say, yeah. And this weather, I think even in this instance, you get this weird thing occasionally where slow motion can make things look different to how they did live.
Yeah, you can make anything.
But Grealish's momentum is actually, it's not him throwing himself for a dive, it's him throwing himself to make the pass. If anything, his momentum is carrying him through Cahill, whose challenge is clumsy. But I just don't read it. I don't read or see how Friend arrives at the decision that he does. And for me, it's troubling.
Let's play devil's advocate. I think he's thinking, when you've got a desperate team and it's an injury time and you're in the box, some players, I mean, we'll try to play for the penalty before they even try to score a goal, if you know what I mean. It's a desperate, desperate measure. So I think he's siding on the side of caution there and thinking, oh, it's probably a dive, just to be on the, I think he's thinking, just to be on the safe side.
I mean, I can accept an error. I can accept an error. And then taking that on a step further forward, I think...
He gave the penalty, I mean, this is what nobody's really asked here. He could have said, well, I can play the VAR card here by, I'll give the penalty, we'll review that on VAR, and if it's a dive, then I'll book him.
But this is the crazy thing about the whole thing, that VAR reviewed it and sided with
him. Yeah, but I think what they did, if it's not a black and white error, then they'll say, as you were, referee's decision. You know, if they can understand why he's given that, then I think that's why they go with the ref's decision.
But then I'd agree with your original tweet that if that's the rationale, VAR's pointless.
Yeah, exactly.
Because...
Yeah.
You know, I think if on the same rationale, you'd never reach, you'd struggle to reach some decisions in cricket. You know, you don't see this in rugby. You might even have quite a protracted review in something like rugby.
I was going to mention the rugby.
The right outcome. Yeah.
I was going to mention the rugby example that really can be learned from in Premier League. And I know obviously the way the game works is different, but it's the lack of ambiguity in the referee's call. In that, I know in rugby, for example, if you use the Grealish example in rugby terms, the ref will let the game run. The ball will obviously go in the net, and then he'll have the choice to say what he calls. So he'll either, it would not, in rugby, it'd be try or no try if he's not sure. Or if he's sure, he's thinking, well, it's clearly a goal. And then he'll ask, is there any reason why I can't award the goal? And then they can pull it back, back through phases. And in rugby, you're talking, this can go back 5, 6, 7, 8, couple of minutes into the phases, and if there's been anything spotted in the build-up, then they'll pull it back. That would have been, that kind of scenario would actually work much better in football.
Yeah, because, I mean, the reason I said he could have just said, that's a penalty, and then we'll go to VAR, that takes away that, because I think he's wired, his brain's wired to think, well, I think he's, you know, players are diving, he's desperate, it's the last minute, that's what's going through his head. But he doesn't have to think like that now. With VAR, he can just think, okay, penalty, I'm judging it for what I've seen. And then he has a chance to, you know, actually rectify that. But, you know, you're right, if he just lets it play on, because now, I mean, that was one of the things, the new rules at the start of the season, they'll play on, and obviously VAR can... track it back. If you see what you think is a foul, you kind of blow it, don't you? That's what's your referee instinct is.
The interesting point that a few people have pulled up on is that the point in which the whistle was blown, and there's a couple of photos that quite clearly show he has blown at the point the ball has left Lansbury's foot.
Yeah.
So it can be argued that, well, actually, you have played on in theory. If the ball has left Lansbury's foot, you're in theory, you're into the next phase of the play.
Yeah.
The ball has gone. It's not like the ball has gone to Lansbury's feet. He's taken a touch and then you've blown up and stopped the game. The ball's come to him. He's put his foot through it. Then it's hit the back of the net. And on the way into the net, you've blown up.
It's a dangerous place to be with VAR, really, because it's quickly losing credibility, I think. And I think in part that's borne out by the strange ambiguity in decision making and the referees absolving themselves of any responsibility or accountability for those decisions. For me, it's I think there's two schools of thought from people who reply to my tweets or I see discussion around VAR, is that they either don't want it or they don't, they can't see the point of it, in part because of some of the really poor decisions that are being made. And on the other side, people who do want it say, well, you've got to go full VAR. You can't sit in this no man's land.
Full VAR.
T-shirt soon to be out. You can't have this ambiguity week to week. You know, there was an absolute shocking challenge on, is it Tielemann?
Yeah,
it was Tielemann's tackle, yeah.
In the Bournemouth-Leicester game, that, you know, it can only be a red card. And I think we discussed him briefly off air, should we have something like a review call? Shouldn't the fourth official just be saying to the referee, look, you need to come and see this on the screen? Every other person in the ground knows that's a red card or a penalty or a goal. Just
if do the
it.
Idea of VAR initially was to get rid of the, the no-brainer big mistakes, and we've got ambiguity still exists, then, I suggested on Twitter that maybe managers should have a review, a la the cricket, rugby or whatever, and, for example, minimal type thing. So you could have, for example, one review per half. And if it takes, if you have a review in the first half and you get it wrong, then you lose the one in the second half, something like that. I mean, it's simple.
We'd stop the stop starting of the game. I see that. I mean, what I still don't understand is you've got a fourth official. What's the fourth official
and
doing?
That's where the fourth official plays in, because the ref, the manager is speaking to the fourth official all the time because he's standing there on the touchline. The manager can just say to him, I want that review now. The only contention is when. Do you have that review? Can you only have that review in when the ball has stopped playing? I mean, you have a problem if somebody gets them upended in the box, the ref doesn't give it, and it's a blatant penalty, and then the other team go down the other end and score. I mean, how does that play out?
I think there's definitely... There's always going to be freak instances, but I would have to say that my view is similar to Bud's, I think, and the rugby theory that let the phase of play out. And, 99 times out of 100, that scenario I would have thought wouldn't happen.
Yeah, but we know football, these scenarios always happen. That's why we like the game.
That's true. And I think the point about football is that it throughout the ages, it has innovated, it has developed, it has changed. But I think you can't, this has to go through another phase of change for me, or people will very quickly be saying, that this technology is not for us. And I do think technology can bring a lot to the game in terms of giving the right result.
You've got to remember that without VAR, all these decisions happen.
Yeah.
And the little subplot through that is actually...
So it's not VAR's fault.
No, it's the referee's fault in this sense.
Exactly, yeah.
He's a blithering idiot, I'm happy to say it.
Consistently. And he was actually consistently inconsistent through the game.
He's a dreadful referee.
Dreadful.
And he's a dreadful referee. I'm going to end my rant on this, is that I'm tiring of these types of referees being held up as like the bastion of some sort of fucking impervious refereeing union that can't be questioned. It's just
there was a
bollocks.
Patronization from, I think, I can't remember if it was a referee representative or an ex-referee, where they said, I think fans just need to get used to the rules and then they'll understand them. And you just think, it's not the fucking point here. It's referees have made the wrong decision. That's what they were saying in respect of VAR. In VAR, it's a lot of semantics where people on social media go, VAR's got it wrong there. VAR doesn't get anything wrong. It's humans.
It's glaring elephant in the room here that if you were to create football tomorrow, there would be no referee on the pitch, probably. And you've got all the technology, you've got all the means to do it. The referee is unfortunately redundant at the elite level of the game. He's redundant. And
every sport has a referee, does it not?
Well, yeah, that's only because it's only because it's always been that way. I think if you, I'm not talking about the lower leagues or grassroots football here, but I'm talking at the elite level of the sport. There's no need for it, and what you've actually got is we've now created a system where you've got two referees, and both of whom got it wrong.
Yeah.
So
and ruined what would have been actually a really good week for Lansbury. I thought he played really well at Crewe. He was deserving of his moment. He's actually he's had a great chance and he's buried it. It's a great finish.
Yeah. And we're talking like he had three assists against Crewe and that finish. And because I said, you know, on Twitter, I said, I feel for Lansbury because that would have resurrected his career at Villa.
Really would. The look of disbelief on his face is quite something, actually.
I did like the fact that Grealish came out after the game and when asked to be interviewed, he simply said, no, I've been told not to because I'll probably get into trouble.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody. I mean, McGinn said he doesn't want to talk about it because he'd probably get a big fine. But yeah, from Lansbury, it was a shame because, you know, somebody said, oh, just, you know, one goal's not going to make his whole career. It's like, well, Lansbury's been in, you know, being in no man's land, and that goal like that gives you such a big confidence boost, and you know you suddenly looked upon in a different light from your teammates, and you know personally it gives you a G on, and he's had a good week, and you know it's a bit of a shame there.
I mean, as an aside, I know you know I'm obviously ranting over here about this decision, but that is a genuine positive actually, the slow rehabilitation of Henry Lansbury into the Villa squad, because Smith's always had a soft spot for him, I think, you know, and it's interesting to see he's around the periphery of the squad, and you know only got 5 minutes, but he came on and he took his chance.
And he's keeping Nakamba out at the moment.
Yes, marvellous Nakamba.
The solution is, in terms of VAR, is it's not the supporters not understanding it. You know, you're looking, we've just seen a football club go out of business. How does that happen? It's because the football authorities are so wishy-washy in pretty much everything they do. They create their own problems just through incompetence. And this is the main problem. It's the only thing that the Premier League does well and all the clubs do well is hype.
Oh, they are superb self-publicists.
They hype their arse out of football. I mean, you know, if you're a Villa fan, all you're saying is, you know, Villa this, Villa that, everything's great. Oh, great. Oh, Monday feeling in the morning. Oh, picture of Villa Park, blah, blah, blah. And then that goes on to, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And, you know, at this discussion on Facebook comments, somebody was saying, I've never felt so so excited about the Villa team and this. We're really together now and this is great. And he said, you know, under Ron Atkinson, it was good in the Graham Taylor years, but the first Graham Taylor period, he said, but this is different. And I said, I remember those two periods. And that's when we had potentially the best team in the land. We were like one or two players away from winning the title. You know, going away, watching Villa in those days in the title race is a whole different level of being on a mission. And I said, what you've got to filter out is the 24/7 sledgehammer hype machine of social media, because we didn't have the internet back then. We didn't have like the club, you know, in-house media and fan channels, and
we had teletext, we had club call, we had the pink paper, the sports.
We didn't have this big hype machine, and this big hype machine, it's like exuding positivity, and all these fan accounts that are just, you know, they're putting out quotes from the manager, positive ones to get the likes, because people will like that. Yeah, Dean Smith said that. I like this. You know, picture of Tyrone Mings. Like. Everybody wants to be positive in likes, but as I said to this guy, we're just starting this journey. We won 10 games on the trot, and that's it. Before that, we were questioning what's happening. We were going nowhere.
This was a team, where are we now? September. This was a team 9 months ago that couldn't pass to each other. You know, couldn't win two consecutive games. It couldn't do it.
You know, we have been on this big hype machine, which is fair enough because it's, you know, it has its pluses because it gets bums on seats, and you know, we've never seen this amount of season ticket holders, season ticket holders, etc. And you know, suddenly you're going to get sell out for like against, you know, teams like Burnley and Bournemouth. I mean, if Bournemouth actually brought more fans, we would have been a sellout.
Yeah.
So we're all being swept up, but in real terms on the pitch, it's nothing like the Graham Taylor team with, like, you know, David Platt and Alan McAnally. It's nothing like the Ron Atkinson team that challenged United for the league and should have won it. And if Dalian Atkinson didn't get injured and we didn't kind of fade at the end. And, you know, we were playing free-flowing football, but we were one of the best teams in the land. One of the two top teams in the land in both of those periods. And the hype was real. It wasn't like manufactured.
Mm. But the hype machine has created a warped division now that we're, you know, we're talking, what, 2025? Is on, and we've been out of it for 3 years, and it's caught me a little bit off guard actually, because there's a rejigging of the order as I knew it, to be honest. And you know, I think that hate to bag out one team particularly, especially a local team, but with the Wolves fans, I think, are starting to see that really, that there are glass ceilings in division. You know, that we beat Everton at home, they go and lose to them at Goodison Park, and you know, get turned around. And I think that there's a, you know, outside of the elite teams now, that everyone's trying to sell the same dream and they're spending a lot of money trying to do it. But the actual standard and quality outside of those elite teams, for me, I think there's good players in amongst them. Is the standard and quality of football any better?
It's I don't know. And at the bottom line of this hype, and football is predominantly run now by marketing people who don't really know their football. It's not like, you know, listeners of the show.
Nope.
If you met one of our listeners in a pub or, you know, anywhere, you would have a proper football chat and you know within a minute, 2 minutes that, oh, they know their football. These marketing people really don't know the essence of it. I mean, I'm speaking from experience, the last few weeks of meeting such people. And, I can't fake it. I'm not going to fake a conversation with somebody who really is just there. Oh yeah, we want to do things for passionate fans, and it's just basically they're selling product. They want you to buy this, that, the shirt, the merchandise. And the real, these people, they'll change their job and work somewhere else. Their allegiance changes as soon as the job changes. Why are we ranting on about this the filter of hype?
We can call it the David Michael filter. We just need a sponsor.
So the reality of the situation is, let's roll it back to where Villa are at the moment. It's still not panic stations. And it's just something else. It's just when you look at that bench and you look at what Palace were bringing on, and even if some of these players are over the hill in terms of maybe they're just happy to pick up their wage check now. I'm not necessarily talking about age, but you're thinking, oh, they're bringing on fucking Townsend and Benteke, and this is Crystal Palace. No disrespect, but they're not. And we really haven't got that. We haven't got even if we brought on an AU or something where you think, well, there's a potential goal threat there. I suppose you considered Codger in the same bracket as him, but we haven't got a trick to play, if you know what I mean.
I think we're new and we're ambitious and we're very wealthy, but we are far from established.
Yeah,
in sporting terms, we don't know where our pecking order is yet. We don't know if we should be going to Crystal Palace and expecting to win yet. The fact that we've beaten Everton suggests we've got it in us. I mean, it's hard to say whether how good were we, how bad were Everton, blah blah blah. But I think we discussed last time, I thought Villa were good value for a draw at Spurs, a draw against Bournemouth, and if they'd have got a draw against Palace, if we'd have come through that Palace game and had three draws and a win from our opening four games, everything would be rosy in the garden, wouldn't it? Everyone would be like, wow, we've started superbly, so that the margins are so fine. But at the moment, we're just not quite getting little breaks. Now, did we deserve any luck at Palace? Personally, I don't think we did. But you kind of have to make your own luck a little bit. And I just think maybe we're not, I mean, McGinn has already said it, maybe we're not being brave enough to actually earn that little bit of luck and those little breaks. Mm. Whereas we kind of were against Everton.
To wrap up what my thoughts on Palace were, that we're in that mini league with teams like Palace, in my view. That prior to that game, they'd beaten Man United, but they'd got knocked out of the cup by Colchester and lost to Sheffield United in the league. So, there's inconsistencies there. We've got to, I think, as was said, that we had an opportunity at Spurs that I think ultimately their class told. Bournemouth, we made two stupid mistakes and we're out of the game before we'd even started. And I thought Everton was a good home win. For me, we've got to address the final third. We need a plan B, and I think come January, if we're still in good shape, we're going to need to strengthen. I do think that, and I think that was inevitable for a promoted.
I think it comes from midfield for me, in terms of how we defend. Because I actually think our back four, generally for the most part, has actually played pretty well. Back four and keeper as a unit have worked well together. But the protection they've been getting from the three, call it the five, in front of them just hasn't been good enough. And then what that five can offer as a forward, as a progressive unit, we're yet to see, what the real plan of attack is.
The flanks for me, even from fullback to wingers is just, or wide midfielders, however you want to class them, has not impressed me one bit. And that was the area of the pitch. If we were going to progress and be a better football team than we were last season, that was where it was going to all happen.
Is it fair to say that we're a new team?
Yeah.
We're not drilled. We said about Bournemouth, didn't we? Bournemouth didn't have any class players, but they were a very well-oiled unit. Palace, kind of similarly, these teams we're coming up against are... they're established teams. They've played together for a long time, and they have
two excellent managers as well.
Yeah, and they know that they know their shit. They know how to get the job done. We don't. We didn't last year either, really. for long periods.
Completely. It's early days. I mean, I'm not getting excited until 10, 12 games in because, you know, these players have only just started. Some of them have only just moved to the country as well. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, if we play head-to-head Norwich tomorrow, I would say Norwich would be the favourites just because they've got that team that's been together for the one that got them up last season and they play together. They haven't just gone out and bought a whole new team, so to speak.
Same as Sheffield United, who've started really well.
Yeah.
You know, these, you're talking about well-oiled units. I think that's the thing. Certainly that's been my overriding thought of Villa, is that we're not a well-oiled unit yet.
No.
Sheffield United, for me, really missed a trick by not signing Scott Hogan on a permanent.
Yeah, and I'm not linking into it just yet, but...
Do it. Come on.
No, there was one mention I wanted to say in the... we're going to carry this little... I think it's a little through line we should carry on. Who's better, Mings or Engels? And I think Engels won this week, and Dan...
I think he did this week.
Dan has been the sponsor of Bjorn Engels. Chris still...
I'm a fan.
Chris doesn't know what country he's from.
I thought it was Swedish. His name is Bjorn. I knew we'd bought him from Belgium. For some reason, I thought he was from elsewhere.
Yeah, I left that in the last podcast. I couldn't resist. Sorry.
Thanks, mate.
Brexit means Brexit.
Brexit means Brexit. But...
they're all the same. If they're from that side of the water, they're all the same.
But two things about Engels which I liked from the Palace game was his reaction when Grealish got booked. If it's a gif, it would be the best gif you could possibly have of somebody finding some situation completely unbelievable. When the referee books Grealish, Engels' face, and then he's just like complete bewilderment, and then his head in his hands, and he's like, "What the fuck is this Premier League bullshit?"
It reminded me, and this will take people back. Hopefully, is do you remember the reaction when was it Ian Taylor's reaction when Shearer was sent off many years ago for, and he was red carded for a nothing,
I remember
nothing
that.
Coming together.
He backed into someone, didn't he, and got a second yellow card. Yeah. If I remember rightly.
Up at Newcastle, and Taylor just like head in hands, almost laughing in the referee's face at this. But Engels' reaction, like you say, at Palace was a similar, just look of absolute bewilderment.
And then when it kicked off, he spotted the policeman with a baton beating up the Villa guy.
Yeah, he piled in, didn't he?
Oh, the assault.
Yeah, the assault.
We're talking about the assault.
Not even alleged.
Yeah.
And
he was beating him with
and
a
he
stick.
Went into, he was basically saying, you know, this isn't on. And the stewards were like saying, no, you're not allowed to mix with the ravel. And, you know, pushing them away. And he was walking away. And then he would turn around and it was like, he just couldn't believe what was happening in front of his eyes. He was thinking, what is this Premier League bullshit?
this in Sweden.
This is meant to be the best league in the world. What is this shit show?
Yeah.
Send me back to Europe. Get me away from this shambles.
Poor chap.
Staunch Brexiteer bud, that can be.
Clearly not.
So I felt sorry for both Lansbury and Engels after that game, and then obviously every Villa fan for what obviously transpired. Eventually, before we go on to the grand finale, because I think we need something to cheer us up, so we will have a fantastic Scott Hogan touch count meter. It's plugged in, it's revved up, it's ready to go. But first of all, just a big shout out to the new My Old Man Said patrons that have joined the crew. Some of them don't actually exist, but the ones that do, thank you very much for supporting the show. Julian Barr, Neil Brooks, Steve Crawford, Nige Cook, Julian Walford, Adam Britton, Willie Stroker. And also thank you for Matthew James and Virginia Simpson for upping their pledges as well. And also Hugh Yass, who doesn't actually exist, but I think it's meant to rhyme with something else. But thank you very much, and please do support the show also, and you'll get access to bonus podcasts and also rewards as well. We have a few things in terms of rewards swinging patrons' ways this week. Just go to myomansaid.com. and click on the patron option and you'll find all the details there. Right then, Scott Hogan, the man that Sheffield United, if they wanted to qualify for Europe this season, should have signed. It's time for the Scott Hogan touch count meter. So, We are proud to be sponsored. Yes, the Scott Hogan Touch Count Meter has a sponsor for this episode. And we put the word out for sponsorship because in the pre-season or the summer, I was negotiating with a betting company, but I just don't want to go down that path. So we thought we would open the doors for more local business or businesses that make quality, beautiful products. And so our first sponsor of the Scott Hogan Touch Count is Warwickshire Gin Company, which is partly run by a Villa fan. So big shout out to him. They are masters of handcrafted dry gin. They have three beautiful bottles, actually.
Very, very, very nice bottles.
Leamington on Parade, Kingmaker and the Philosopher's Daughter. So you'll be able to check out their website on the show notes. But also they are offering up a triple pack of their gins for competition. We're going to run this on Instagram, but I've been blocked on Instagram. But hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, we are good to go back on Instagram. So head over to the My Old Man Said Instagram account and I will put details up there of the competition to win a triple set. You have to be age 18 and over, obviously, to enter. And you can win a triple box of these fantastic handcrafted dry gins. Just
that's a great
like the
prize,
post and follow Warwickshire Gin Company on Instagram as well, but they'll be tagged into the post. But yeah, rather than free bet nonsense and that, we're going to give you something beautiful and something to ease the pain. If our friend is the referee again in any match, you'll have a
weapon.
You'll have something to. No, don't throw these bottles at refs. That's not the idea.
No. You'll be able to toast our victories.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so when you are celebrating good times, make sure it's Warwickshire gin times.
Exactly. It will be the perfect drink to celebrate our renaissance after the international break. Right, Scott Hogan Touch Count Meter, we have to decide who is going first.
Dan
is going first. So where we proposed, obviously Scott Hogan went to Stoke, and what we proposed was this would be kind of a portal. It would be a little section to have a look back at the championship, that domain that we left, and currently we're in the bottom three. So we may be making a swift return, but let's hold fire on that thought just for at least a good few months. But funny enough, Stoke, if we do get relegated next season, we probably won't be playing Stoke because they're currently bottom of the league on 1 point.
With thanks to Jack Butland's
Jack
antics.
Butland dropped. Oof. As well.
Oh dear.
And unfortunately, to add more salt into the wounds, they got beat by the Blues at the weekend 2-1. Not a good look getting beat by the Blues at any time. But Stoke, when they dropped down, they were favourites that the next season to go straight back up. And when you look at the team, there's still a decent squad there that you would think.
And they're a very wealthy club, aren't they, as well?
No, exactly. And obviously they're getting down through their parachute payments now, as we full obviously had an experience of that. So anyway, in this tragic 2-1 loss against the Blues, Scott Hogan, and this is a bit worrying, well, not for us, we don't care, but Scott Hogan was started on the bench this time. So
his usual spot,
the bubbles then burst already on that account. Came on 78th minute. You know how we're going to do this. I will announce who's the closest after the first two guesses if you haven't nailed it. And then on the third guess, if you're within three and the other one isn't, then you can be declared the winner. You'll feel it out when we go along. Anyway, so Dan, first guess. Scott Hogan came on 78th minute, so he's had 12 minutes. How many touches did he get?
He had 7 touches, David.
Chris Bird, first guess.
3.
Right. Second guess, Dan Rogers. Oh, maybe I should write these down, actually. Sorry, what was the first? 7 and 3. Right. Second guess, Dan Rogers. You're not allowed to have the other person's numbers, by the way.
8.
Chris Bird.
5.
Right. At the moment, Chris Bird is the closest. So Chris has the choice here. Do you want to go first on this final guess or second?
I will go first, yeah. 3 or 5? 4.
So over to...
What's Chris had?
He's had 3, 4 and 5. And you know he's the closest.
Is this ridiculous? 2.
Dan Rogers wins.
Wow.
It was 1.
Oh my God.
That's fucking awful.
Bring out the gin. Bring out the beautiful Warwickshire Gin Company gin.
So,
pour it into my veins. Drown out the noise of Chris's complaints. The fact is that he's lost. I am going to be supping Kingmaker, as you should, dear listeners.
It's 1-0. There was genuine tension.
So, as always, if in doubt, think less.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the, being the philosopher's daughters.
Considering he only gets about 10 touches in 90 minutes, it's like... Did he have a shot, Dave? Did he get a shot away?
I think he did, no.
Of course
he's
not.
Scoring blues,
but let's keep
it?
This on a Villa touch. Birmingham, in their lineup, had a certain Daniel Crowley.
Ah, yes.
Remember him?
Yeah, the young lad.
Yeah, he was a player that came through Villa's youth system. Was that actually on the bench when we won the Next Gen trophy against Chelsea in Lake Como? And he was...
How old was he, like 12?
Yeah, I think he was 16, yeah. He was like somebody who was pitched as so good and super talented, and, you know, he was like super skillful.
The next Gary Gardner.
What was he the next? I think he was the next. People were comparing him to like Wilshere because he was a great passer. I don't know what his injury record was like. And then, anyway, then Arsenal poached him, and we were all pissed off about that because he was like the genuine talent. Him and Grealish were the genuine talent of that youth team. Obviously, he was a bit too young to break into the next gen team, but good enough to be on the bench. Went to Arsenal, then spent a lot of time in the Dutch leagues on loan, and suddenly he's fallen from grace and he's ended up at Birmingham City, which... which isn't a good look. Anyway, he came on as a 53rd minute substitute. How many touches did he get? So we're talking 37 plus minutes.
19.
Chris Budd?
15.
Second guess?
20.
Second guess, Mr. Bird.
22.
Oh my God.
Right. Chris Budd is the closest going into the third round. So Chris has a choice of going first or second.
24.
25.
Dan Rogers has got him.
Oh, I'd just like to take this moment to thank my friends at the Warwickshire Gin Company for making this possible.
Although he's, you're way off, so I don't. Maybe there should be a new rule.
How far are we off here?
Like 41 touches he had.
Shit,
listen, David friend Michael, I think you should pipe down.
All right, well.
Anyway, I'm off to Leamington on parade, so I'll see you boys later.
2-0. I think that's all we need to go for. I had a nice third one. And
it's another win for the gym.
The third one was just for shits and giggles. Rogers has won that 2-0. It was actually Gary Gardner. He came on 83rd minute as a substitute. Just because, you know, we might as well mention this because we like to see how these old Villa boys do. How many touches did he have 83rd minute? Dan Rogers, you can go first.
15. 15.
In 7 minutes.
Yeah, he's the best. It doesn't matter, I've won now. I'm reading the back of the bottles from the Warwickshire Gin Company, available online. Very reasonably priced. 35 pence.
Please, Mr. Bud, give me a guess.
10.
Next round. Quick, Rogers.
14. They also sell chocolates online.
15.
He's already had 15. Rogers has gone for 15. That number is taken.
16.
You're not much of a philosopher's daughter, are
right,
you, Chris?
So
not when it comes to Gary Gardner, no.
The closest is Chris.
Oh, well, consolation,
third,
isn't it?
Third round. Chris, first or second choice?
18.
17? Did I have 17?
You're kind of way out still. You're out by at least 5.
Six. Wow. I'm going for 6 as a preliminary.
Well, Bud's already won it because of his. He's got it the closest.
Sorry. Now, what was the score overall?
2-0. But anyway, what would you go for, Chris, if you went for another guess?
I'd probably go for a shot of Philosopher's Daughter.
Come on, hurry up.
19.
Fucking hell, you're going the wrong way, son. It was 4. He had,
wow, is he that
he had
bad?
4 touches in 7 minutes.
And he's a central midfielder, and that's why he couldn't get a game.
Exactly. You see, from the Scott Hogan touch count,
it's like a scouting report.
Anyway, so well done, Mr. Rogers. That was a storming victory. If anybody has any ideas out there for tweaking the rules, because it's obviously a work in evolution, please do get in touch.
Potentially incorporating gin.
But it's getting there. I think it's better than the higher and lower thing.
Yeah, that's rubbish. Mm.
There was definite genuine tension there. And the spaces of these two thinking will have been edited down considerably. Because I don't think you want 5 minutes of silence while they're trying to work out what touches they're going to go for. Right. On that note, I think it's game, set, and match. Please do follow the podcast on Spotify, Apple, or whatever podcast utensil you listen to this on. Please do join the Mad Few group on Facebook. That's normally, you can find the links there in the actual show notes. Anything to add, gentlemen, before we disappear off into the international break? How are you feeling about Villa out of 1 out of 1 to 10? Dan Rogers.
5.
6.5, I win again.
Right.
No one's winning here, Dan. We're all losers.
On that note, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.